for downloading this Cultaholic audio podcast. You can watch the video version and be part of a future episode at patreon.com/cultaholic.
Take him out back, sell the tape into the front of the car, and drive him around in the rain for a bit.
That's how we do it.
That's how we do it in the Northeast, yeah.
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg! He's ready! Oh, hell yeah!
It's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
It's the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review! We're back once again with the Renegade Master, D4 Damager, power to the people. Who be the people? I be Faye Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell, joined by the resident WCW kid, helping me chronologically critique every episode of Nitro to the very bitter end. It is, of course, Sam Driver. You're right, love.
You're right, Petal. How you doing?
I'm all right, Petal. This is the first time we've been together in a hot minute, we just realised.
It's been a fucking ages, yeah.
It was pre-wedding before we the last one of these
I was like a massive lapse in my brain, like, hold on.
You came and went,
when the fuck did we... What the fuck happened last week?
Last time we talked about Nitro was before I was a married man.
So we did Nitro, then we did Uncensored.
Uncensored,
and then we did SmackDown. So I've missed the episode after Uncensored, right?
Yes, queen.
So I've just missed an episode basically full of recap clips and nothing else.
No, you missed a really good episode of Nitro.
It was recap clips, and everybody at home will agree.
If you say so, hun, that's exactly what it was. We had a lovely couple of beers on Sunday as well.
We did. We had a couple of little bevs.
You sent me a nice message saying, hey, fancy a beer in an hour? Finished some shopping and
had some time to kill before seeing family, so I was like, yeah, I'll just get a few beers,
kill some time with Tom.
Yeah,
we had some lovely beers in a pub just under the Tyne Bridge.
Yeah, it used to be our local when we worked at the old place when they moved over to the Quayside, because we'd all have to come back through town, and we'd drink there a lot, like 3 or 4 times a week. It was a not stressful job.
But since you did that and up to now, this particular pub that we drank in the other night had some infamy to it.
Oh yeah, it's the night that Johnny Depp got cleared or charges got dropped or whatever the hell it was that happened there. He was in that pub. He was playing with Jeff Beck, the Sage in Gateshead. So they went out on the piss beforehand, and then Sam Fender showed up, and then Johnny Depp just went on the piss in Newcastle afterwards.
Yeah. And that was there's an iconic video of Johnny that was filmed of Johnny Depp as he's leaving the Bridge Tavern. Yeah. We were sat where that video was taken.
Outside. Just a little bit down the corner. I still think the bit upstairs is the best under the sail. That's the best bit.
Yeah.
But what else happened there? I'm trying to think. There's definitely some other stuff's happened there.
That's the only thing that I know. But it's an old pub that's called attached to the Tyne Bridge, and we quite like the l'histoire that comes with it.
Yeah, it's a nice little pub.
Got an excuse for the got let out by the wife for a couple of hours.
Yeah,
the old ball and chain. I can now start referring to.
Never stop complaining about it, do you?
Never stop me.
If you listen to this, Alex, it's
my
just
bloody
constant.
Wife, eh?
Constance, all he does.
My bloody wife, eh? Honestly, mailbag at cultaholic.com. Let's get into it because, mate, I'm going to give you a heads up, right?
Right.
Turns out one of the things that we have joked about on the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review is a real thing.
Okay, right.
Is a real thing. I want to thank AJD.
It better not be my promotion. If somebody's stolen that in the last 2 years, I'll have you. I'll have your fucking eyes out.
AJD and Eddie Edwards, not that Eddie Edwards, have both emailed in with similar messages. I'll start with yours, Eddie. Hi, lads. The other day, whilst browsing Reddit, I came across, pun intended, the following story about the 2011 World Masturbation Champion.
It doesn't surprise me. Humanity's disappointing, isn't it?
Something which I'm certain you guys came up with for a bit that has turned out to be real.
Well, I guess we're going to have to do a podcast special. Oh. It's going to have to be audio only, though. I don't even think Patreon would allow the video for that one.
I can't be alone in finding the concept that you two manifest in this way utterly terrifying. Now, if you excuse me, I'm off to uncover the terrifying human rights abuses at the Bovril factory. Oh, congratulations on the wedding, Tom.
I hope they've got a like a presenter like Mean Gene, but he's got a similar name like Nasty Nick or something. You know, just
wanky wodger.
Yeah, wanky wodger. Just something like that. Come on. And he's bald and he's also got a golden voice. And a 1,000-yard stare whenever he realizes he should be competing. He's looking at the level of caliber of talent that's coming through these days, and they ain't a patch on the 60s and 70s.
He is furious.
Not like back in my day. Too showy.
Not enough goey.
Fundamentals just aren't there.
AJD emails in and says, greetings from Oregon and the Oregon Trail. Hope this message finds you both.
Oh, the Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
What a video game.
Hell of a video game.
It's in my bathroom in my house. Because I've got a separate like shower and bathroom, and I've got a toilet room. So it's in the toilet room. I have a framed print of the Oregon Trail, and it's like a beautifully painted like Western creek
nice.
Scene.
Nice.
And it's just got the family in like the 8-bit style. Like two of them dead, and it just says you have died of dysentery.
That's just what you want to read.
It was the best. I thought it was the best room to hang it in. Couldn't really put that up in the living
room. Can't wait to take a dump in your house next and see
fucking
that.
Nobody takes a dump in my house.
No, you'll get fucking dysentery instead.
It's like,
apparently,
it's like a tour bus. You're allowed to piss, but you're not allowed to do any other business. That's strictly mine, Tom.
Thank you for being hilarious and awesome individuals. I've been listening since the first episode. I've enjoyed the clusterfuck of an experience you've put us through thus far.
That's probably the nicest way to put it, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it is a clusterfuck. After a full work shift of catching up on a month of Nitro.
A month? Oh,
yeah.
My God, you poor bastard.
God, love you. I stumbled upon this Reddit post and immediately thought of you two and the mean Gene Law. I know you two don't look into the future during the reviews, but any help or insight would be greatly appreciated as to how mean wanking Gene doesn't have the world masturbation record would be greatly appreciated. And I've been sent... So, two bits of intel here. First is from AJD, and it's an article from the Huffington Post. I might combine both bits, actually, because you both sent lovely bits of intel in about Masanobu Sato, who is the world masturbation champion of 2008 to 2011.
What are the parameters here? Because I think I know what's happened with Gene. I can get into that in a little bit, but what are the parameters we're judging this guy on?
Okay, well, let me tell you about the Masturbate-a-thon.
The Masturbate-a-thon. It's like WrestleMania.
Whoa.
Wankermania.
Masturbate-a-thon.
Oh, God.
Fighting for your life. It's an annual affair where events are held in place appropriately titled the Masturbatorium.
Oh, my God.
If a man is taking part...
It's just already so spermy. Just the words
so
are
spermy.
So spermy. Ah!
Okay, it's called a masturbation competition. It's essentially an edging contest because the winner is the one who stays aroused without discharging.
Well, first off,
for as long as possible.
This has made it more abundantly clear why Gene doesn't hold any of these so-called world records or titles.
Yeah.
And it's because it's sort of like the IFBB versus the WBF, except it's the International Federation of Masturbators against the World Masturbation Federation, which Gene was a part of. He sacked off the initial one to join Vince McMahon's operation. And essentially, that meant he was blackballed. They took all of his records away, his legacy. It's all gone, and now they've flipped the rules completely, so it's not about speed. Trying to just remove the sport that he made great.
So, Masanobu Sato held the record in 2008 at the San Francisco Masturbate-a-thon, where he stayed upright for 9 hours and 33 minutes.
That can't be safe.
No, it doesn't sound
that
safe.
That doesn't sound safe at all.
He beat his own record, pun intended, the following year, pushing it to 9 hours and 58. he's incredible.
Don't they say with like the like dick pills and stuff, if it's more than 4 hours, like you have to go to hospital. Like you it's going to fall off.
Well, that's
is that
with
because
performance
of the
enhancing
of
drugs.
The performance enhancing drugs.
That's performance enhancing drugs.
So if you do it natty, then I guess it's more healthy for the body.
Apparently so.
Right.
I would imagine that is
How
the case.
How do they prove he's not used any form of performance enhancing drug? They piss test them more.
I presume they're piss tested beforehand because you'll get, you know, you'll get.
I don't know. It's sloppy. It doesn't seem like it is.
No, it's not sloppy.
It's not sloppy.
If it's sloppy, then you're out.
But like in terms of back in Gene's day, it was a lot more rigorous.
Back in my day, you could take all the drugs you wanted.
That was the beauty of it.
The beauty of it. Masanobu Sato has earned sponsorships with Tenga, which is a Japanese company that makes crazy futuristic masturbatory tools.
I was in a Daiso in a Japantown in LA, I went up to what I thought was an ice cream fridge. It is not an ice cream fridge. It was an old ice cream fridge full of Tenga eggs, and I just cackled. Oh. I just cackled. I went there, I was like, oh, it's really warm. I could do with an ice cream.
Would you pop one of them in your mouth?
I just stood there with like a handful of crap. I already had like, you know, like cat toys and like, I had like chopsticks and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, I could just murder an ice cream. And it was right by the till, like convenience area. And I was like, oh, I just grabbed like a fucking lollipop or something. Nope. Wanking tool.
The two-time champion talks a little bit about his training, where he says he begins masturbating for 2 hours every morning as his girlfriend goes about her daily routine.
Oh, God, what must she think? What do you tell the family?
It's his job.
I'm going to introduce you to my dad. What do you do for a living? I wank.
I mean, I'd rather say that than I'm a YouTuber. I'll be perfectly honest.
Like Ryan Gosling in Drive. He's got a little leather glove for it and everything.
Sometimes she even helps by timing his performances. She said, he puts a lot of effort into it. I just have my own hobbies.
I wonder if she's got chants and like banners for him and stuff. That'd be great.
Now, there is actual training involved when preparing to do this. He goes swimming a lot because swimming helps his muscles in his arms.
I guess
they help with stamina and circulation. Yeah. And yeah, so swimming. So if you are looking to competitively masturbate, swimming.
Maybe you don't have anything else left to give in this crazy, crazy world. Maybe AI is already taking your job, but it can never, ever take the human masturbation record.
AI will never.
That's within your grasp if you can go, what, 10 hours?
It is within your grasp. Your very gnarly, blistery grasp.
Your hand is going to look like you've been a laborer for 55 years. Working like with stone, like a mason without any tools.
You have like enamel like chef's hands at the end of it all.
He's got to have a moisturization sponsor, surely.
The only sponsor I've got here is Tenga, but I would imagine that he would be sponsored by like another company that would probably supply him with that. He's also written a book.
Oh, okay.
Under the pen name Turbo.
How many copies of this are we going to get fucking sent?
Well,
this is just going to turn up to the office addressed to both of us.
Oh, we'll
just
get ready
addressed
for
to
it.
The office, so people are going to go, who's been ordering this shit?
He writes under the pen name Turbo Masturbo. And the book is called How to Masturbate Properly and contains 100 masturbation commandments.
Commandments.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say photographs. I was about to be like, oh, so he likes to expose himself via the written word, does he?
I think it's more just tips and tricks. 100 tips and tricks. Tricks of the trade.
You got to switch up your grip.
Use your non-dominant hand. I don't know. I'm just guessing at this point. Okay. Welcome to the Nitro podcast.
If this is your first episode, we are
sorry. We should have explained.
Thank
this.
You for joining us on video. If you are indeed one of our patrons, you can check out all of our new. We've reinvigorated our Patreon over at patreon.com/cultaholic, but it allows you to see how awkward we look right now discussing this, having maybe brought it into reality.
Yeah, I'd also like to say hello to my family who I'm seeing over Christmas, just intrigued as to what I do for a living.
Yeah, can we get this guy on for like a guest episode?
I don't know what his current status is.
We should see if he can kind of give us any sort of
wanking tips.
Background on Gene's career.
He might, he might know more about me and Gene's masturbatory habits.
Yeah.
And may be able to shed some light on what he's doing right and what he's doing wrong.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Well, look, thank you. Classic@cultaholic.com.
And now we all know where to go when we need to properly have a wank.
Yes.
Properly
Turbo
being the key
Mass
word.
Turbo. I like that he has a pen name. Like, no one will know who this is. Secret job.
I can and I can't believe this is real.
It's a real thing.
It's, oh my God.
Well done. Well done to you, sir. may you never be beat. Let's bring it to 1997, long before Masanobu Sato competed in the masturbation
Back
championships.
When Gene was the king of the castle.
When Gene was the king of the wanky castle.
Which is like a bouncy castle, just as bouncy, but just really sticky and slippery. It's very gooey.
They're snake's eggs.
Yeah.
If you get the reference, you're welcome to it. We're watching Nitro this week from March the 31st, 1997. This particular week was the year that Channel 5 launched.
Which, if you lived somewhere that was flat, you would get. Having lived in a valley for quite a lot of my life, we...
Metaphorically and literally.
Both. It would come through, but it was super snowy. Like, so you would barely be able to make out the image.
Are we still talking about Masanobu Seito?
We are. You just hear... Honestly, you get kind of like a little bit of the sound, but mainly it was just... with, like, static over the top of it. But it took, like... It took ages for us to be able to get Channel 5 clearly. I remember that. And it was like, it just took forever to roll out.
Oh, so you may have been one of the lucky ones that saw the Spice Girls launching Britain's fifth terrestrial TV channel.
And it was all downhill from there.
Yeah, it was not...
In fairness, Channel 5 is like the TNA of British terrestrial TV.
Yeah, that's a good show.
It's the thing that nobody really asked for, but we got anyway. It has had some moments of greatness, but there has been a lot of poo.
Been a lot of poo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now it's on like a career renaissance run.
Yeah, it's kind of settled into its role now. There's a few digital versions.
It's a lot
of
American stuff in. It's good. It's got a good bit of range.
They found their niche.
Yeah, they've got a diverse offering.
It's worth mentioning Channel 5 as well, because Channel 5 will indeed play a role in the future of WCW.
Oh boy, it will. It's some of the worst direct-to-TV sort of recap shows ever made. I don't think Americans have maybe seen the full extent of how bad it gets. But tuning into that and trying to pretend wrestling was cool was difficult.
Because Channel 5 will get the UK rights to WCW in a couple of years' time, which we'll talk about in a couple of years' time.
Yeah.
The Crocodile Hunter debuted on Discovery Animal Planet this particular week in 1997. Steve Irwin bothering alligators.
Just go grab a crocodile or an alligator by its tail, whip it around your head, wrestle it, and kind of be like, crikey, these really tough while he's trying to gnaw your arm off. Great.
Yeah.
Best classic, TV ever.
Classic television launched in this particular week with the late, great Steve Irwin. It was also this week that we saw the April Fool's Day blizzard of 1997 in the States. A major winter storm in the northeastern US that raged from this particular day to the 1st of April. This would play havoc with Monday Night Raw. We talked about it a few months ago.
It's not just something the Northeast lied about to get 2 days off work and pretended so the rest of the country were like, they wouldn't suspect them of not going to work.
Funny enough, a lot of people did think it was bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously they announced...
They just used, you know, all the cars back then looked the same. Just use some shots from a blizzard in like 85 and then we'll all get a week off, yeah?
Because of the date that it was falling on, a lot of people took the warnings of the storm but seriously. Yeah, they went, whatever, April Fool's Day storm, sure thing. And then rain and sleet and snow from Maryland to Maine left hundreds of thousands of people without power and 3 feet of snow in some places as well. It was just chaos.
It'd be nice to live in like a lighthouse in Maine and all the power goes out. And you just get waves smashing into the rocks as you sit there looking out over it. Yeah.
That's a very romantic version of a storm.
And there's turrets, and I've got
a
way to keep people away. And a big spotlight I can shine on them and be like, get out.
We had our mini moon in Disneyland Paris to the week, Alex and I, my wife. And we were there in the park for about an hour and it started snowing. I was like, oh, how magical. Yeah. It's our honeymoon. We're in Disney and it's snowing. And then by midday, it was a fucking blizzard and they shut Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Oh, that's
like, ah, you bastard.
But snow is my favorite weather.
Yeah.
It's I'll just stand at the window and watch it snow all day if it snows.
It's really pretty when it's not dangerous to life. Otherwise, it's very pretty.
That's why I stay in, because then I can just think it's pretty.
Just lie and think it's pretty. We get a recap of Nitro from last week to kick us off for this week's episode of Monday Nitro. So last week, you missed this. The NWO.
Let me guess, largely nothing happened.
Things happened, and things that would have made you angry happened.
So Tom picks a week that he knows would have made me angry, and he doesn't show me it. You could have had any episode you wanted. Any episode.
You know how angry...
You could have had this episode.
Nah, this is just for us, you and I. You know how annoyed we got at the stupid rules of the uncensored
NWO versus WCW versus Piper's Randos match.
Different people winning meant different things, and the match was lopsided because it was three teams, but equal numbers, but three teams tagging whenever you want. Very weird, but if I win, I get all the gold. If you win, you don't get the charge for belts ever. If I win, I get a title shot. If I win, I get this.
So by NWO winning, they get a shot at any title they want.
Right.
They took that. They cashed in that opportunity last week. And they went, Savage, you're going to fight Prince Iaukea for the television title.
You got to lock up all that gold.
Yep, lock it all up.
How did Iaukea retain?
DQ, because everyone did a fucking run-in.
So the NWO did a run-in on a match that they needed.
Well, DDP ran in, and then the NWO came in.
Yep.
And the show ended with Iaukea and DDP getting sprayed by the NWO.
So it was just pointless.
Yep, pointless. It was a pointless match they built to. It was a pointless match to have, and it was a pointless outcome.
It was a pointless cash in. Why wouldn't you like? Not in the days of a cash in. Obviously, it's not quite the same. But like,
you could have.
It is a cash in. You could have gone for the world title.
You could have held it
as an insurance policy.
Yeah, you could have kept it as an insurance policy and said, "Well, when you lose the belt, win it back straight away."
Gone after any belt you want, but you go after the one you've got to defend every week.
Hmm.
But this Saturday night as well, there's loads of... Why would Savage not beat Iaukea? I'm fucking so happy I didn't watch that.
Yeah. But this week we are in Roanoke, Virginia. Here come the NWO. No Hogan, no Scott Hall, no Eric Bischoff. It's very much a wather-thin version of the NWO this week.
And Macho and Nash are discussing something, and Macho's like, maybe opposites attract. And they kind of like all mumble and walk off.
They like that Paula Abdul song.
Yeah. With the half animated video.
Yeah, that was great, that was. So NWO here, and there's a little different energy about them tonight, which we'll touch upon. Opening match is Lex Luger and the Giant, Biddly B, taking on Ric Fuller and Roadblock.
And the fucking crowd are red hot for this.
Because you're chucking out big stars to start the show, and they're like, yeah, let's go!
Unfortunately, it kind of sets the tone for most of the card tonight, though.
It does a little bit.
Yeah.
Luger and the Giant are labeled as World Tag Team Champions. I thought they handed those belts back to Hall and
they
Nash.
They don't have the belts with them, do they?
Because I thought they handed them back.
But the Chiron said that they were champions. They're champions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I often don't pay attention to the Chiron, but this week I went, it just confuses things. They're so, like, then they're awful at explaining their own lore.
It could have changed hands three times. you've cut me out of integral lore here, Tom.
No, the thing is, I often think that when I watch it week to week, but there's a lot of lore where they just assume prior knowledge. Right. And they go, that was a private conversation Eric Bischoff had. Well, could you not tell it on TV? No.
I'm gonna quickly check if we're in focus. We just feel
like we're on the Okay. So as Sam Driver checks that we are in focus and not a little bit blurry on the Patreon feed, Fuller and Roadblock, they look like a decent team. They briefly hold hands at one point, which is very sweet. I don't know if you clock that. The crowd are really into Luger, but he gets worked over by the heels for ages in this one. Luger hot tags Giant, who turns the tide. We get the choke slam and torture rack double finish, but done right this time because they fucked it up a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where they didn't get the timing on
it
quite
right.
Right.
There was no good timing in this segment. I don't know what you're on about. Well, it was terrible. The Giant going, you are this! You are this!
It was better timing than previous.
He was signaling for the choke slam, signals for it, has his hand all the way around his neck, and then Luger gets in and he goes, and a torture rack.
It was better timing than the previous.
Pointless.
They tried harder this week.
Shit.
Harlem Heat interrupt proceedings and they attack Luger and Giant. As we go to our first break.
We brawl into the break.
Brawling into the break. Post-break, Harlem Heat speak to Wanking Mean Gene, who says, Masanobu Sato, I hardly know her. He claims that they've taken everybody out in their path and they don't get any respect, say Booker T and Stevie Ray. Gene points out that there's a Four Corners match coming up with the winner getting a shot at the WCW World title, and that is indeed a match at Spring Stampede. It's Lex Luger versus the Giant versus Booker T versus Stevie Ray. One-on-one. The winner of that match gets a shot at Hulk Hogan and the world title. Stevie ignores what Gene is saying. Like,
Gene tries to sow dissent like he usually does.
Of course he
Gene's getting all like, you're going to have to probably face your brother in that match. How are you gonna face off against your own brother, you monster, having to face your own brother? You're going to beat your own brother up, are you? Are you going to attack your own brother? You're going to lay your own brother out and then put yourself first and take the title shot? Do you think you can get it done? If you beat your brother, just being a proper little horrible bastard, Gene.
Stevie ignores the question completely and just lambasts Luger and Giant some more, saying, "It's on like neck bone, sucker." Stevie Ray concludes with his sign off.
But his best line is, "Giant, you big, tall, long drink of water."
Could have gone worse. Sherry says Harlem Heat will divide and conquer. They don't address the whole all-for-one aspect of the match.
No,
though.
But it's got to be weighing on their minds a bit.
Mm.
But Booker T should automatically be the one that gets the shot.
Booker T versus Hulk Hogan in 97?
Yeah.
Yes, please. That'd be lovely. We won't get it, but that's lovely. Mako Satomura takes on Toshi Uematsu next.
Toshie Uematsu.
Mike Tenay on commentary for this one because they've gone Mike. Help.
And also Larry on commentary for this one because they've gone Grandad Christmas meal racism.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why not? We're beginning a tournament to crown a WCW Women's Cruiserweight Champion.
The final's going to occur at Spring Stampede.
Mm.
So we've not really got long. It's like a 2-week tournament. This is two representatives from the company Gaia over in Japan.
And it is, Toshie Uematsu, who we're seeing for the first time on Nitro, and the legendary Mako Satomura in her formative years.
20 years old or something.
I know.
Here.
It's nuts, isn't it? The woman that will become the final boss of NXT UK in that last big stretch of her career, but will make an absolute name for herself as one of the finest women's wrestlers on the planet. And we're seeing her in her formative years here, which is great. Young Satomura is a proper pocket rocket. However, tonight's not her night. She gets undone when Uematsu counters a frog splash. She goes on to pick up a win with a top rope splash. Uematsu wins, or as Larry calls her, the one in the green.
Well, yeah, he's which one's the one in the green again? Which one's the one in the red again? Just come on, Larry.
God.
Come on, buddy.
That's Larry for you. Spent too long near the cube. The Wrestling Observer says the idea to have Kato versus Hosaka on Saturday night and have the winner of that match face Uematsu next week on Nitro is to determine the new champion. But after the match was so weak, there's a lot of second thoughts about having this second title. Like, why would you start a tournament and then two matches into a tournament for a new championship go, oh, maybe we don't want that title?
I think you can ask that throughout the history of wrestling tournaments.
Yeah, it's
but
true.
But ultimately, like, yeah, you've got to commit if you're a... If you're rolling with it, you got to at least commit. WWE committed to things like Cruiserweight title, which everybody wanted back, but not in the way that they brought it back. But they still committed to their own route of doing it, where it was like, everybody wants to see dynamic action with Cruiserweights against non-Cruiserweights. Nope, just they're going to face each other. They are not allowed to wrestle anybody else. They're only allowed to face each other. Maybe in a tag team, we'll let them get squashed by the Bludgeon Brothers. That's it.
Don't leave SmackDown. It's the Cruiserweight show now that you wanted. Where are you going?
It just records afterwards for an hour.
Yeah.
Or beforehand for an hour.
Please stay.
Sometimes we don't tell you which. We've got purple ropes.
We call it 205 Live, so it has to be live.
Yeah.
We've made a rod for our own back.
But we record it.
Psychosis in action next against Viano 4. Tanae is staying on, thank goodness.
Tanae revealing that Viano 4 is Raymond Doza Jr., who we've seen 2 months ago.
Yeah.
But I believe we've got 4 and 5 in WCW, and both have appeared as Ray Mendoza Jr. because all of the Vianos are the kids of Ray Mendoza.
He gives the whole backstory saying there's 5 Viano wrestlers emanating from the movie actor Ray Mendoza had in an they emanate from the movie Ray Mendoza, the role Mendoza had in an El Santo movie. That's where the Viano character comes from.
The villain.
Yeah. Larry Zbysko says, where do you find out all these things? And Tony replies, he reads, Larry.
He reads encyclopedias like God intended.
I love the idea.
One day there might be some super information highway that everybody can just pull answers from the thin air. But no, Mike Tenay does his research.
Zbysko's comment just says so much. He goes, how do you know all this stuff about wrestlers? And Tenay, I go, mate, it's my job. I'm a commentator for wrestling. I have to know things about wrestling. Do you?
They don't let me near the mic unless I do my research.
Zbysko just turns up and goes, which one's that? Christ. A gorgeous corkscrew moonsault to the floor by Psychosis.
Yeah.
Near fall from Viano 4 after he counters a top rope move with a flatliner. It looked lovely. Yeah.
Very, very close, very nice back and forth, as expected from these two, to be honest.
We get a bit of backstage goings on with the NWO. Mm. There seems to be a little bit of upset today.
Yeah, so Nash, Norton, X-Pac, and IRS, sorry, Six, and and VK Wall Street are bickering about somebody needing to lead NWO in I guess, Hogan's absence. They're all a bit listless, a bit rudderless right now, and then commentary gossip about a potential rift forming in the NWO as Psychosis picks up the victory. But what I'd like to talk about in this match is that beautiful, beautiful corkscrew to the outside from Psychosis that Larry follows up by mentioning people believing that a UFO was behind the Hale-Bopp comet, and that UFO was actually Psychosis. So what he's referring to here is about two, three days before this episode of Nitro, they found the Heaven's Gate bodies. So everybody who was part of the Heaven's Gate cult believed that, well, the leader believed that there was a UFO trailing Hale-Bopp comet, which was like in the sky over Earth for a good couple of months, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we talked about it last week. The Hale-Bopp comet was in visualization.
But yeah, they thought there was a UFO trailing it, and they had to basically board the UFO at the right time in order to cross over the Heaven's Gate, which is sort of transcending humanity into like a spiritual plane of existence, or like the next form of existence higher up like the spiritual chain or whatever. But they had to do it by a set point, because if they didn't, Heaven's Gate would close and they would never be able to get to that level. So they find them all wearing matching it's like track suits with away team on them. They're all wearing matching Nike trainers. They're all kind of covered in sheets in this mansion in Beverly Hills, and they all left together.
Oh, was it a pact?
It was, well, the leader kind of, I believe it was poisoned juice, and then there was bags involved.
Oh, jeez. And that was...
like suffocation, go to sleep, and then that was it. Mm. Yeah.
I wonder how they got on.
There are still two or three members, though, that stayed. They're like the home team.
Oh, they missed out the opening of the gate.
They had to stay behind to keep spreading the message.
Heaven's
Gate. If you don't know about Heaven's Gate, there's like a four-part HBO or Netflix one that's really good on it. But it's one of the more fascinating things that happened in the mid-90s.
Either that, or chances are somebody with an overmodulated microphone has made a 9-hour video about it on YouTube.
Yeah, there's loads of videos out there. But the recent multi-part series is really good, because they get like crazy access. So if you can dig that out, it's well worth a watch, because it goes into the complete history of the leaders and everything else, because they thought they were like alien beings, and their bodies were vehicles. So that's what I think I put in the notes, is their vehicles were found 3 days ago.
Makes sense. From the top of the Hale-Bopp comet, Psychosis lands a top rope guillotine leg drop, and he picks up the win, dedicating it to not the Heaven's Gate friends, but Rey Mysterio, who is out of action.
Well.
Read into that what you will.
I believe one of the victims is Uhura from Star Trek's brother.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, there's some extracurricular stuff to look into.
Just to bring the mood right down. Anyway, moving on.
Right, hang on. How do we gear change? Uhura is Ric Flair. Jeez. Pulled a muscle with that. Mean Gene introduces Ric Flair. He gets a huge ovation. There's a sign in the crowd that caught my eye.
Yeah, mine too. As they say, I mean, right at the start of the show, we had one big lie from Tony Schiavone as well, which I want to quickly address.
Oh, please do.
He says, you're looking at a capacity crowd. Well, we're actually looking at fucking trussing with lights on it. You liar. You liar, Tony. You lie and you lie. But here, it's like, here comes Flair. The crowd love him. And then we see a fan sign that says, Flair for prayers, because he can heal the sick, raise the dead, and most importantly here, drive all the little girls out of their heads. A very, very poorly worded song.
I've just written, yikes.
Yeah, it was a big yikes, as the Redditors would say.
Flair begins to address Roddy Piper, and then Roddy's music hits. Oh, here we go. It's a Piper promo in 1997 WCW.
Yeah, he's still on his Icon shirt, which stands for I Can't Open Nuggets or something.
He gets a huge ovation as he comes out, and Piper says he respects Ric Flair, and he is here to put an end to the rumor. His girlfriends don't call his waterbed the Dead Sea.
You glossed over a lot of stuff here.
I am, because, my God, there's a lot.
This was garbled nonsense, and all deserves the time that it should deserve. He says to Flair first, before saying all that about the waterbed, that his ears should be longer, because what are you, like Pinocchio, you've been telling fibs. And then
I get it, because he turned into a donkey.
And then there's no way Flair's girlfriends call his waterbed the Dead Sea. But the delivery was kind of like the room. It was really weird. It was like, I did not hit her. I did not.
It was so weird.
I did not.
I've been acting.
Flair then says he's glad that Roddy can drive his Hollywood ass to the airport and come out here instead of going to the Oscars, which he could have been at. And then Flair says Roddy won't be the greatest of all time. Roddy then shouts, the House of the Rising Sun. Roddy then says they know each other inside out over all these years, all the back and forth. Roddy says that Flair has never been beat, 13-time world champion, lost it 12 times. They also get played off, they almost get played off by Roddy's music. Flair insists they stop the music, and Flair shows off Liz in a Nugget shirt. And then, just to decipher the gobbledygook, they respect each other, and they're going to go for a pint later. Also, doesn't Liz look good in this shirt?
I don't think it was Liz.
Was it not? I thought it was Liz.
So I recognize it. I put here is a young lady wearing mom jeans and a Piper Icon shirt.
Liz. It wouldn't be Liz.
No, it wouldn't make any sense. So I saw this woman a bit later on in the night, and she was picking up wrestler's attire and taking it to the back.
She might have been one of the Proto Nitro girls.
I think she's like a ring hand rather than a Proto Nitro girl. But she was wearing, but basically, Flair introduced her to Piper. Yeah. Said, this is my gift to you. And it was her wearing a Piper shirt.
Have a gift.
And she said she loves the hot rod. So what I got from this is that Piper and Flair are now a team. They're going for a pint and they're going to spit roast a woman. That's what I took.
There's not really any other way to decipher it. It was a lot of garbled nonsense.
Thing is, right?
Yeah.
We're relying on the commentators to do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of explaining stuff. But a lot of the time, they don't. And that's why we have these sort of Mandela effects of Nitro.
Let me just put you in the chair, right?
Please, in the commentary chair.
Okay, so here's the running order. Here's the people who are going to win. Here are several key points you need to get across in each match or whatever. Everybody's got their own notes. And then they go, Flair's going to come down, do something with Roddy. It'll take like 2 minutes and just sort of go with it. And then they come out and they do that.
Yeah.
How do you sit there and decipher like the garbled nonsense?
If it were me.
You've just got to let it sit.
If it were me, and then Bischoff goes, okay, then Flair and Piper are going to do this bit for 2 minutes, and then I'll go, whoa, can you please let me know what they're going to do and what the point is?
The role of Larry Zbyszko will be played by Larry Zbyszko this week instead of Tom Campbell.
I'd just go, okay, can you just tell me what the gist is they're going to do? Don't tell me they're just going to come out. Tell me what the end game is, so when they've done their bit, I can explain it to the audience.
Listen to this.
I know, right? It's almost like a fucking commentate sometimes.
Demanding is what you are.
I just like notes.
Yeah, no, you're not getting any more from me then. You should just know. If it's good enough for Nitro, it should be good enough for you.
I just want to know, so I can do my job properly, what points I'm hitting.
I'm just going to, next time I'm going to do a running order for you, I'm just going to write match next to it.
Oh, you're an
ass. Match. Probably a feud brackets, even though it's not like just a whole thing. Have you go off?
I did some commentary and this match happened and this guy came out and he got a massive ovation and he was in the corner and I went, I have no notes on who that is.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find any intel about who he was, but the crowd are really into him. So I said to her, I've got to pause this and I've got to ask around, who is this guy? Because it seems like I can't really act like don't know.
That man was Kurt Angle.
It was Kurt Angle. Who knew it?
Brett the Hitman Hart.
We get a recap of Randy Savage versus Prince Iaukea from last week, and then we get Prince Iaukea in action facing La Parka, and that's where I point out the woman that Flair brought out ringside is ring crew, and she's taken some of La Parka and Iaukea's gear to the back.
Well,
she's taking Ikea's Billy bookcase to the back.
Well.
Parker and Iaukea flummox a bit of a corner attack, with Parker moonsaulting on top of Iaukea. They somehow push through it. A couple of top rope moves don't put the prince down, and it spills to the outside. Chairman getting a chair and hitting a suicide dive onto the seated prince. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Then the chair goes up against the bottom rope, and then there's like a baseball slide with the chair. Then the bell rings.
Yeah.
It sounds like the referee definitely says, "Ring the bell!" But you can't see his face. And then commentary are like, "No, that's a mistake." And the referee's in the ring going... And they just keep wrestling.
Yeah, despite the fact the bell has been called, Prince Iaukea dives onto a chair-wielding Parker in the ring, and he gets a three count. Yeah, but he absorbs it like a brave boy.
Well, he hit the padded side.
Oh,
He hit the padded side.
Even though the bell sounded for the end of the match, they still counted Prince Iaukea's win. This was, again, a little bit of confusion.
Yeah, it's all right. It's just they've got stupid rules, like you can't go over the top and you can't cheat to win.
Boring bullshit.
Crap. That'll all be gone within the year. This time next year. We'll just be in full chaos mode.
Ah, oh, excellent. Mean Gene introduces Prince Iaukea's Spring Stampede opponent, Lord Steven Regal. The peasants chant USA, and Regal talks about J. Edgar Bischoff being suspended, which gives him the chance to face Prince Iaukea in a rematch, this time without, quote, Dopey the Dwarf, Rey Mysterio, distracting him.
Then he calls Rey a freak, and then he goes, well, maybe freak's a bit too harsh a thing to say. Maybe I'll just call him a dwarf. And then he says once he wins the belt back, Rey will get the first shot at Regal's regained title, and then promises to turn him into a vegetable in the 18-foot square ring.
That's it. I don't want you to worry about them hurricane runners and planchers, because you'll be sipping your food through a straw when I'm done with you.
Which is, I mean, fair enough.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like it.
As far as pre-match threats go, yeah.
It's all good. So Regal's in action next. He's facing Chris Jericho. It's like WrestleMania X7,
maybe. Massive, massive, massive USA chance for American hero Chris Jericho. I found Jericho's entrance music in a record store the other day.
Mammoth, all the days.
Yeah, I wasn't going to buy it because it was £7, but I found it. Yeah. I was like, oh, I took a picture of it and then just put it back.
It's on Spotify, mate.
Yeah, but it's I was like, if it was £3, I would have bought it. But no, I'm not paying £7 for that.
Just listen to it loads, and it'll be your Spotify.
You don't get the same experience. You don't have a giant picture of Mammoth to look at.
Listen to it anyway, mate.
Just fucking
listen to it on a bus.
Listen to this.
Listen to it on a bus, mate. It's brilliant.
Take your record player.
Take record player on a bus,
like a Walkman, but just huge.
I might do that for a funny video. Just walk around town with a big vinyl player. That's music was meant to be listened to. A short, sharp match. Jericho winning, catching off guard Regal with an O'Connor roll.
Regal then just beats him down after the bell. Can't believe he's been humbled by such an American hero as Chris Jericho.
Does it with a pile driver and a Regal stretch as well, and he won't let go of the Regal stretch.
And it starts to get a bit like, ring the bell 90 times, what's happening? Stop, let go of him, Steve, what are you doing? This isn't on. And then out comes Gomez, who tries to get Regal off top of Jericho.
Well.
But yeah, Regal just lays him out. Kidman and Lane emerge and get dropped, and then Renegade sort of comes down after Gomez. Renegade comes down before Gomez. Renegade's first, but he kind of gets that down there and he goes like,
I ain't getting involved.
I don't know what to do. And then just gets out of the ring.
Yeah.
It's like, is he a chicken? Is he being paid for by Regal?
Well, it kind of...
Surely he would have attacked the other two if he was on Regal's side.
There's this quiet dissension between Renegade and Joe Gomez that approximately zero people care about, because they seem to be splitting them up. And going
Why
their separate ways.
Why did they saddle Renegade with the gimmick after they'd stopped doing... They could have made him anything.
Yeah.
And they kept him as a Warrior ripoff.
But they could have paired it back. They paired it back.
They didn't pair it back. He still sprints down to the ring. Sometimes he wears tassels. He's still doing all the Warrior mannerisms.
That's paired back. A little bit.
A little bit.
Somewhat paired back.
They weren't referring to him as the ultimate competitor or anything.
Just, I love how they flip-flop on Regal being, well, I'm a posh coward, too. I'm a fucking killer.
Yeah, well,
he was a fucking killer tonight.
He's both at the same time, though, which is why there's that weird duality of Regal. I love it.
Duality of Regal in Cinemas Friday. Hour two of Nitro gets underway.
Fireworks in that.
Pew, 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 pew. We get a recap of the NWO segments in the first hour. Some trouble in the paradise of the New World Order.
And then we get an update, because IRS, or the... Mr. Wall Street, whatever his name is, kicks a door like a big fire escape bar and then leaves in a huff with his duffel bags.
Another one bites the dust in the NWO. What's going on? We also get a recap of Piper and Flair forming an alliance.
Going for a pint.
Yeah, and spit roasting a woman, apparently. Okay, Debbie Coombs and Akira Hokuto in action next, one-on-one.
Poor Debbie does not stand a chance.
She certainly does not. Debbie gets the crowd chanting USA. She looks more like Goldust than Goldust does at this point in her particular attire.
Yeah, she's in like a single gold sort of singlet. And it's kind of, yeah, she looks very Goldusty.
Mean Jean.
Big head of hair, though. Keeps getting just dragged around by her hair.
Yeah, and the hair is her weak spot, it would seem. Doesn't go long, about 3 minutes. Akira Hokuto picks up the win with a German suplex.
Tiger suplex, I believe.
Tiger suplex, yeah. I apologize. Debbie looked fine. Hokuto looked great.
Yeah, he was sort of just, yeah. Made Hokuto look strong.
A quote from the Wrestling Observer does not age well. Dave Meltzer writes,
I'm all ears.
Akira Hokuto retained the women's title, pinning Debbie Coombs. Like you need two women's matches on the same show. Can you say style clash?
Oh, Dave.
Oh, Dave. I mean, this ain't a gotcha for Meltzer because, like, it's like going back through old tweets and going, ha-ha, you were a cunt once. but it's still a line that does not age well.
No, it's
like how women's wrestling is a style.
Times have changed, and yeah, women's wrestling isn't just a style.
It's just like you got the luchadors.
It was almost like an attraction that would also be on the poster.
Yeah.
Like, also, women.
The ladies' match. Yeah. Mean Gene catches up with Medusa after this match, and she starts talking about her match with Hokuto coming up.
Who cares about any of that?
Well, Hokuto does.
Yeah, because she jumps her.
Jumps her, attacks her. We'll get a brawl breakout with Satomura and Uematsu pulling Hokuto away, with Debbie trying to pull Medusa away.
While Gene's caught in the middle of it, and you hear Gene go, oh, my back! Which is really good.
I've been carrying this segment.
Medusa kind of comes out initially, though, before she gets attacked, and she just tries to get like a big cheer, so she goes like, this city is cool. Jumped.
The classics. Sonny Ono legs it from the fight, and he briefly uses WCW a lesser spotted mascot, yeah. Wildcat Willie, as a shield.
To the point where commentary have to mention him because they never mention Wildcat Willie. Like, he's hiding behind the cat.
Sonny Ono using Wildcat Willie as a shield to get away from Medusa in the same way that Matthew Gregg from Botchamania used Photoshop John Eiley as a shield to escape Eddie Kingston. That's a real thing that happened in the lore of professional wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
We get a special look at Sting next and his success in WCW. That wasn't Sam's fingers clicking, by the way.
That was my fingers clicking.
Satisfying.
Very satisfying, but nowhere near as satisfying as this Sting package. Because when we get Michael Buffer's voice and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the man known as... And then it sounds, not Sting, it sounds like he goes, Steve! And then it does the whole kind of speedway race thing where it's like, known as Steve! Steve! And then you see a highlight reel of how Sting has gone from happy-go-lucky, bright young baby face to miserable, depressed little emo boy.
It did put me in mind of the fact that Michael Buffer had no idea who Bret Hart was for many years and once called him Bret Clark and then in one announcement just said, Bret! He's paid fucking millions!
He's got to worry about boxing.
We see how the locker room turned on Steve, which led to Crow Steve and the eventual coming around to WCW once again. It's a lovely video package that explains the Sting saga so far. It's brilliant. One thing that WCW don't do very well in this era, Sam, is explain what the fuck is happening.
Yeah, so anything like this is welcome because there's obviously been a massive influx of viewers as they've been winning more and more ratings. So it makes sense to do stuff like this when you had viewers that maybe weren't watching at the time and have only been able to read up on what's happened and why Sting is the way Sting now is. But at the same time, if they'd just given him the NASCAR with his face on it a week earlier, yeah. I think we would have avoided all this.
We could have avoided all of this if we'd done it. We get a recap of High Voltage beating Public Enemy with help from Jeff Jarrett and Mongo. And it leads us into the next match, which is Jarrett and Mongo, the Horseman, facing the amazing French Canadian.
There was something I needed to... There we go. So, yeah, Mean Gene with Flair. After the sign that says, like, Flair for president.
Oh, okay, we'll go back
right,
a bit.
Fans are shown watching, shown standing on the front row in matching brand newly bought on the night Four Horsemen shirts.
Ooh!
On those shirts are Flair, Mongo, Arn, and Benoit, as it should be. So out comes Mongo with the stand-in and the stand-in's girlfriend,
What you
Debbie.
Don't see is Jarrett on the back.
I've got your back, brother.
Jarrett on the back in a speed roll. I am also a horseman.
Maybe it's one of those ones where you get it home and you're like, oh, God, I love my classic horseman shirt. Not a Jarrett in sight. And then you put it in the wash and some of the ink comes off and Jarrett's been hiding there all along.
When you wash it once, Jarrett appears. quick rendition of O Canada before we start. I always feel like that this should be cut off, but it never is.
No, you got to. I mean, come on, Tom. Canada's an equal part of North America.
It is, but they're such baddies. I'd assume that every time it becomes.
Oh, they're baddie because they're just from somewhere else, are they?
Yes. That's how wrestling works in the
90s. Very xenophobic, Tom.
Well, that's how wrestling was in the 90s, as was the style at the time.
Maybe Tom's just xenophobic right now.
I might. Do you know what? I might be.
Tom hates Canadians. Can't. If he so much as smells poutine, he just starts dry heaving.
More like poutine,
maple syrup,
am I right?
He just throws it down the drain. Disgusting.
I'm sick on it. Mongo's cleaning house and the Public Enemy come out seeking revenge. Jarrett gets double teamed by the Public Enemy. We see Parker stealing Mongo's Halliburton, though. Mm-hmm. Colonel Robert Parker grabbing the Halliburton from Mongo. Nom, 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 nom. In the confusion, Parker throws Rougeau the briefcase and he twonks Mongo with it to get the three count.
Yeah.
So Jarrett and Mongo eating a loss to the AFC.
All thanks to Jarrett, and then Deborah complains because she gets blamed for everything.
Well, she doesn't like to gossip, but it is her fault. Mean Gene speaks to Deborah at Mongo and Jeff in the ring. Deborah says she is not responsible for the other week, and she actually broke two nails in the fray between
she was
Jarrett
injured,
and
yeah.
Mongo and the Public Enemy.
She was seriously injured.
Yeah. Deborah then reveals she's not one to gossip, but Johnny Grunge has bad breath, and Rocco Rock shaved his head because he's never heard of dandruff shampoo.
I thought she meant like Alpacin, not dandruff shampoo. It's like, oh, he didn't realize he could just use magic coffee shampoo and grow his
I've
hair
back. Oh, I've
seen
that caffeine shampoo.
Bald dude.
Mongo is livid that he gets the short end of the stick in these matches. Jeff is sick of being blamed for the horseman's downfall. There is dissension in the ranks.
No, Mongo correctly guesses that it was Jeff Jarrett that hit him with the case. And that it was all Jarrett's fault. Good on you, Mongo.
Well, it wasn't Jarrett's fault.
Take him out back and just sell the tape into the front of the car. And drive him around in the rain for a bit. Teach him a lesson.
That's how we do it.
That's how we do it in the Northeast, yeah.
That's how we do it in the Northeast. Lee Marshall!
Oh, my God. Loves the Bammer, does Lee?
He's at a Nitro party in Huntsville, Alabama, filled with Southern hospitality.
He says it's as sweet as Tupelo honey, get it? Because it's the song.
Tupelo is the location for the Spring Stampede this Sunday. Huntsville is the home of the NASA Space Flight Center. NASA first launched a monkey into space. It was meant to be a weasel, but it couldn't stop whimpering and wetting all over itself.
The fact that Bobby is now just going, there it is, just dryly every time. They've got to be sitting there going, why did we make him record 300 in one day and give him one joke?
I'll let you in on a little preview for coming up because we're a couple of months ahead on the Raw review. They do a house show where they bring out Lee Marshall in front of the live crowd.
Yeah.
He gets fucking booed.
It's one of the worst parts of the weekly show, and it's not really Lee's fault. He was just brought in and did a job.
It's the worst and the best.
It's you got to do more than just kind of, if there's not something that rhymes with weasel, he's like, hey, I saw like a bank robbery happening earlier and it was conducted by a weasel. Like he just finds any way to say the word weasel. Yeah, he deserves those boos.
He deserves all of them.
He's going to turn face in 2008 when he becomes Tony the Tiger, but long way to go. Yeah, he's still an ethereal flesh-eating demon from like a parallel dimension.
Maybe the boos were because he was a demon from a parallel dimension. The boos.
Maybe he is his
away.
Own dimension.
Oh,
yeah.
So he controls his own narrative.
Well, he did. He did darken the skies over spring break when he engulfed the entire broadcast.
He's that big cloud of creature that takes over in Deadpool and Wolverine. That eats all. The
I
people.
Saw that, but I'm trying to.
I can't remember what his name is.
No idea.
It's him. That's Lee Marshall in my head. That big cloud is Lee Marshall.
Disney.
Does not. Hugh Morris takes on Chris Benoit. We get a picture-in-picture of the Dungeon attacking Benoit and Malenko coming to his aid this past week. So that was a fun little bit where we had the Dungeon beating up Benoit and Dean Malenko, who is facing Benoit with the US title on the line, coming out to help Benoit because he's like, I want you healthy for our match.
Yeah, I want you healthy for our match. And also, you're not a cheater like Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, like that dirty, stinking Eddie Guerrero. Yeah. There's a little bit of backstory there. Morris stomping on Benoit to start things off. He's pretty dominant throughout this one. The soundtrack of this match is woman screaming and Jimmy Hart cackling. That's all I can hear.
Really like stomp. Stomp.
But the end comes with Benoit picking up the dub with a lovely German suplex out of the corner.
Ooh,
very nice. Immediately after the three count, the Dungeon of Doom hit the ring.
Yeah, Jacqueline, to be expected.
Yeah, exactly. Because Jackie Head takes out Woman and then joins in the pummeling on Benoit. We even see Jacqueline hit a top rope splash onto Benoit.
We almost get a Jackie splash times two.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Woman's crotches are on the ropes.
Yeah, Woman takes out Jackie and Jimmy at this point. Ric Flair hits the ring, sending them all packing with chops and punches and eye wrecks and low blows.
Nut shot to Sully. Yeah.
Oh, walloping nut shot. So Flair going it alone to save Benoit from the Dungeon of Doom. Distinct lack of Jarrett and Mongo. And
well, Arn comes down as well, but Arn, as like Sullivan's trying to leave the ring, Arn just lets him leave.
Yeah.
Lets him leave unharmed. Somebody also dunks an entire drink over Sullivan, which I loved, but yeah.
That was
Arn
a nice bit.
Just lets him get away with it.
Arn is currently injured, so Arn can't do anything
and
physical.
Mongo's too busy taping Jarrett to the front of the car. You can't expect him to run down.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mean Gene catches up with Flair, Benoit, Woman, and Arn Anderson. Arn says he's hurt, but he's always going to watch the horseman's back, but he can't do anything. What's the point? Benoit takes aim at Kevin Sullivan, as per, saying he's watching the sunset on his career and the dawn of a new generation. Benoit says he respects Dean Malenko, but it's all about victory this Sunday at Spring Stampede. Ric Flair declares Chris Benoit will become the new United States champion.
Yeah, he gets that big Flair endorsement. And is he going to beat Deanie Beanie? Potentially. We'll see.
The Observer saying that there's potentially a story that's going to see Benoit splinter away from the Horseman with an attack.
They're going to make him a secret agent.
Well, the plan
is he's going to want to sleep with Lita.
It's going to be revealed that Benoit is going to take out Arn Anderson, and then it's going to lead to Chris Benoit versus Ric Flair. And then Benoit forming his own horseman,
very
possibly
nice,
with Dean Malenko and or Chris Jericho and or Steve Regal.
Very, very nice.
Ooh! Give me that timeline, you cowards!
Oh, absolute filth.
Bloody love that. What a lovely idea that is.
Rumor and innuendo.
It is indeed, all of those things. Next up is Diamond Dallas Page facing Lance Ringo,
who will soon be known as Sick Boy.
It's Sick Boy from the Flock. In his pre-Sick Boy era, Lance is milking every bit of TV time he's got. He walks out with the nudie mag, what has Kimberly in. He's showing it off as he walks down to
not
the
only,
ring.
But he's showing off the exact Randy Savage NWO version. Where it's
yeah, he's got the limited edition version.
Yeah. He paid for the Chase variant.
He's admiring the Jazz mag and not paying any attention to DDP. And consequently, he takes a pasting. He comes back briefly with a lovely springboard dropkick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he looks strong in the few moments he's able to capitalize. But it's just DDP being so wily and so out of nowhere. I mean, he gets the diamond cutter comes from like an F5 position this time.
Yeah.
They're really building on the fact this move can be hit in like 1,000 different ways.
They've done so well building the diamond cutter, and it pops every time for the crowd. Every time. Mean Gene speaks to DDP post-match. Gene is looking forward to Paige versus the Macho Man, as am I. Paige says he's real proud of his wife being in Playboy, but he's furious with what the NWO did to him to him. DDP says he's going to snap into Savage's
into
real world.
Sausagey world.
Sausagey. His blood bogey real world of a Slim Jim. Here's Randy Savage and Liz in the crowd. Liz has apparently told Savage that the guy's name is DDP, aka Diamond Dallas Page.
Signature hold. The diamond cut. It always does my head in when like a move that isn't a hold is called a signature hold.
Yeah, because it's not a hold, is it?
No. I mean, he's got a hold of them for like a split second on the way down.
Yeah. A hold would be a sleeper.
Yeah.
Or a leg lock.
This
That's
is
a hold.
Finishing maneuver.
It's
signature
a
maneuver.
Mm. We'll take that. But he reads his profile on him because Liz has told him who he is. Because the whole story has been Savage refusing to acknowledge who DDP is. I think they could have played that a bit longer.
Well, he's still leaning into it a bit. He's like, what are you, a gemologist? Because, you know, he's got a diamond on his logo.
What are you, some kind of gemologist or something? Crowd are chanting, Macho sucks. Savage says Paige will never get the diamond cutter on him. And he doesn't care if Kimberly comes or not. And the Spring Stampede will all see if DDP has got any family jewels.
That means balls.
Yeah, because Savage says you ain't got none. Paige responds, I guess we're going to find out at Spring Stampede. Don't forget to bring your little bimbo, Liz. Since I'm bringing the lady, you might as well bring the tramp.
And then then it's just Savage going, what did you just say? Don't make me come down there while walking slowly backwards towards the concourse.
This is a story I have loved the build to.
Yeah.
It's simple. It's effective. It's an older guy versus a younger guy. It's
great. Just follows a main nerve, doesn't it? It's a very easy, straightforward thing to follow. You don't really even need to catch it weekly, right?
No.
It's just, you can just tell.
If Hogan was doing feuds like this,
rather than just going. He needs to hang out with Dennis Rodman.
Hang out with Rodman, a feud with Piper.
But what if we get Hulk Hogan over in North Korea next? You know?
I mean,
what if that happens? Opens up a beach shop in Pyongyang.
I'd love that.
Him and Jimmy Hart, Brutus Beefcake.
God, that'd be so good. Oh my God, that'd be so Hogan. The main event this week is a proper glistening beefy battle. Big meaty men bumping meat. To quote Big E this week, God love you, mate. It's the Steiners versus High Voltage.
Yeah, I get they're trying to get High Voltage over as a credible threat now. They've evolved from being the kind of job tag team, but they are still very much the job tag team. And on a night of kind of extended squashes, this is just carrying it over into the main event.
Rick Steiner gets taken out by High Voltage with a blast to the ring post, and he takes a bit of a pacing. They're still playing on this idea that Rick Steiner's the weak link in the team.
Yeah.
Because he was never quite right since the car accident.
And Scott's just desperate to get the hot tag in, but they're able to. That's what I mean. Like, they look strong here in a way that they wouldn't in the typical High Voltage squash matches we've seen. Mm. They're getting quite a lot in. They're taking Rick quite far. But we're just waiting on that Scotty tag, aren't we?
And once we get it, he runs wild and he picks up the W with what I believe is the first outing of the Steiner screwdriver.
Oh, man, just yes, yes, yes,
It starts off in a suplex position,
yeah,
but it drops into a pile driver position. Oh,
and
it's a great
this
move.
Is what Mike calls a Steiner screwdriver suplex. It's not a suplex, Mike.
No.
It's a fucking pile driver, Mike.
It's suplex in its setup, but not a suplex in its execution.
It'll be like the Tombstone pile driver suplex.
Well, there's no point is the Tombstone a
you
suplex.
No. You can still throw somebody over your shoulders if they're upside down.
You could, in theory, call it a Tombstone Piledriver Slam because it starts off in like a slam position, which he then moves into a Piledriver position.
Maybe. I don't
know. We're playing semantics over a pretend sport, but we like doing that, yeah? That's why we love it.
I'm going to confer. I'm going to find out.
I'm just basing... I base that idea on... He's calling it on how the move is set up,
yeah,
rather than how the move is executed. Which is
Steiner screwdriver is still a better name.
No, don't get me wrong. You are on the money, honey. It is still a Steiner screwdriver. It's not a Steiner screwdriver suplex.
Yeah,
it's not a suplex.
Maybe he should do the pile driver bit and then somehow flip them and suplex them while sitting down.
That's
why didn't you think of that, Scott?
Yes, Scott, you coward.
Too busy thinking about your freaks and all the white trash out there. White trash!
White trash! Rick is grimacing as the match ends, still struggling, as we say, post-car crash, but a big win for the Steiners. After the match, there's a bit of commotion at the broadcast area.
Mm.
And here is Kevin Nash and Six.
And Bobbington needs to run away, but he can't run away. He's like, oh, no, no. So he tries to climb over the table and gets his foot caught in a cable, and it's all quite funny.
It's just a hilarious moment where Heenan is retreating and he just spends ages trying to get over the announce table. It wasn't. I don't think it was meant to happen like that, but it did. It was very funny. And Kevin Nash leads an NWO sort of State of the Union address.
Yes.
Here. He says, I don't know what the hell is going on with the NWO right now. Scott Hall is taking care of business, more important than pro wrestling, while Bischoff, Hogan, DiBiase, Vincent are up at Rodman's opening day movie shenanigans. We're here taking care of business. You boys in Chicago, if you're watching, you don't want to get me mad because I'm one person in the business that can stand alone. Steiner Brothers, big win tonight. Who cares? In Triple O, Nash will be there and I'll take you on alone. All you Napoleons that can't get on the adult ride, the only reason you breathe is because I allow it. As long as I got breath in my lungs, I'll fight WCW by myself.
If he has to.
If he has to.
But then they trash the commentary stage as we fade off.
So we are already at the point where we're teasing a WCW, an NWO Civil War.
Well, you know, there's only so much time a storyline like this can run for. You're talking, what, maybe a year? And then we'll just not have anything to do with the NWO afterwards. Mm. On to a bigger, brighter future. I'm sure that's going to be the case.
Do you feel like...
I reckon by the start of 98, there'll be no NWO. We don't have to worry about it. No factional warfare within the NWO. Certainly no color scheme changes or good guys flipping. The NWO being kind of good, but also bad. And a lot of confusion. And then it make things worse with NWO 2000 down the line or anything like that. While Vince Russo's also in charge of the book. And Jeff Jarrett once again tries to insert himself into something more popular than himself in terms of a team. Surely.
Surely not.
No.
Surely not. I mean, that would be awful if that happens. And surely not to come back in 2002 and do it, but worse.
At least
do we feel like this came out of nowhere a little bit?
Because
I don't feel like I've sensed anything but unity in the NWO.
We haven't really had that dissension to the level, unless there's been stuff playing out on other shows that we're missing. It feels like we've skipped a step where there should be some bickering, some blame being pointed, and a bit of a rift forming between people rather than just, oh, they're all hanging out with the celebrity and I didn't get invited, so I'm going to moan.
It seems so like a lot of stuff goes
unsaid. But it's not so much that he didn't get invited. It's that he turned up to wrestle because I guess he still got honor in that way or whatever. But I don't know.
It just feels like a lot of stuff.
We're getting Wolfpack eventually, which is going to be sick.
It's going to be great. But so much of the story of the NWO versus WCW seems to go unsaid.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is a medium
read
where
between
you,
the
should,
lines, Tom.
You should say it.
Read the adjective.
I'm trying my best, but the lines are really shit.
What's going on with Scott Hall?
So, the Observer says, a lot of the Hall situation has to do with his marriage possibly disintegrating over the past 2 weeks. There's no word on what's going to happen in regard to the weekend pay-per-view show where Hall and Nash are scheduled to defend the belts against the Steiners. When Bischoff was in Japan for the New Japan party, he was telling people that Scott Hall would be wrestling on the pay-per-view. Hall missed all the weekend shots, although he was advertised as being at all the cities. It's really bad how WCW handled the Hall situation in regard to its lack of ethics in dealing with paying customers. So Hall is having some personal problems. He has been granted a leave of absence to deal with them, but they're still advertising him for shows.
Yeah, no, that's just what they do.
Mm.
There's a reason, like my dad would never take us to any WCW house shows because the amount of times they'd come over and half the card just wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Or it'd just be, you know, this guy turns up and he's injured, but he's not injured. It just wasn't working that night. And it's like... So I think that it does become a kind of an issue, especially toward the end, that talent are being advertised to sell tickets to shows and then people are turning up and the magical words cards subject to change are immediately thrown in front of them. And tonight you've got Prince Iaukea in your main.
They do a lot. And those words do a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah, it's kind of oof, you know.
The Observer also opines... There's no question at some point that Hall and Nash will draw a ton of money feuding with Hogan and Savage. But I don't see that happening anytime soon because it's too soon to make that move. And sadly, it's a move that we'll never see. Because, there was at one point when we had Hall and Nash and Savage and Hogan on the screen. I think I said to you, I went, if that was just the NWO...
Yeah.
That'd be great.
It'd be so much more condensed.
Yeah.
It'd be so much more threatening and ominous.
Yeah. But and then you could tell that eventual split of like, we're the young guns compared to you, old bastards.
But I do
Let's
think
go.
It would have been more limited. And at the time, having this chaotic thing that hadn't really been done before where you can't trust anybody was probably better in the long run in terms of like attention on the product. Had it been that team of four, they still would have drawn. I mean, Christ, I'm not saying they wouldn't, those four names. But I think in the way that the NWO is almost like an army, that's a big part of the appeal at the time, is that it's just so dense.
Yeah.
And then only subsequently would we start to look back, or halfway through at least, when there's like 50 members, we'll start to look back going like, ooh, This maybe was a bit too quick.
Too much, too soon.
Yeah.
It's a Thursday. Are you streaming?
I am. I'm probably doing marbles because I need to do marbles.
Marble Mania.
Yeah, marbles.
A little bit of marbles tonight, 6 p.m. GMT.
/Cultaholic. Get yourselves in there right now. Eternal Glory, Marbles, Trophy, The Works.
All those things. And for the very latest wrestling news at any time, you can check out cultaholic.com. And until we're next together, he's at the Sam Driver. I'm at Tom Campbell. Together, we're going to... You bastards.
Which one's in red?
Thanks for listening to this Cultaholic audio podcast. For video versions and to be part of a future episode, join us at patreon.com/cultaholic.